Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Ночь куранты бьются злее, что-то, брат, им невдомек. Чьи бредут очки до шеи, кто торчит у мавзолея, чей дымится еле тлея.
When the Iron Curtain came down, this is some of the music that we got a chance to peek at for the first time. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and coming up on the show today, for the Russian band DDT, it was hard enough being a rock band under the Soviet regime. The group, which formed in 1981, gave secret concerts in apartments, bomb shelters, and even kindergartens, just to avoid the attention of authorities. Later, though, the policies of perestroika allowed bands to perform out in the open, and DDT went on to become one of Russia's most popular acts. But that new freedom came with a price. We'll ask a professor how rock and pop changed during that time, but first we're joined in our studio by Laura Pellegrinelli, who wrote about DDT for Time Out New York, and she joins us to share their saga. Laura, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
So you wrote a whole article about this Russian band. They're doing a brief tour of the States. They're
That's
at the
right.
Hero Ballroom here in New York tonight. Why are people showing up to these concerts? How do people know who DDT is?
I think most people know who they are because they're Russian. They're Russian Americans. They were either born here or they immigrated here. Because otherwise, as I found out when I tried to write this piece and when I tried pitching this piece, no one, it seems, in the United States had heard of DDT. Only people in the know, only people with that connection back to the homeland.
So back in the homeland, I mean, just give us an idea of who DDT is in Russia. I mean, is this the Rolling Stones of Russia? Is it the Madonna of Russia? I mean, yeah, just who would
I
you think compare
it,
them
it
to?
It is kind of like the Rolling Stones of Russia. One of the people that I interviewed on the line outside Webster Hall the other night likened Yuri Shevchuk, who is the lead singer and the songwriter for all these marvelous tunes, to the Russian Bob Dylan. So this band, I mean, it has a very long history. We're talking back to the 1980s. The personnel has changed many times, but Yuri has been, I would say, kind of at the forefront of rock music. And he's also someone, it's very unusual, I think, in any sphere of popular music for someone to remain an innovator for decade upon decade. And so here we have someone who is not only continuing to produce music, but continuing to evolve as an artist album after album. He's 50 years old now. And so now, you know, there are about 20 DDT albums and they're all different.
And they all feature his sort of gravelly singing. Now, you mentioned you spoke to some of the people outside of Sunday's show at
right.
Webster Hall. Here is Alex from Coney Island. This is one of the people that Laura spoke to in writing the article.
They're very political. They're very anti-government, actually. They're very libertarian in their views, I guess. And it's nice to hear that there's some people, there's still some voices of dissent. They're pretty much, you know, suppressed, but this is one of the few ones that let out.
All right, so Alex Caleb from Coney Island, standing outside of Sunday's show by the band DDT at Webster Hall. Laura Pellegrinelli wrote the article about this Russian rock band, which, now, they played Sunday night. They're playing tonight at the Hero Ballroom. Where else in the States do they play? Is it just places that would have a Russian kind of immigrant population?
Well, the tour they did was five cities and major cities. So we're talking about Los Angeles and Chicago before they got to New York. So, I mean, I can't vouch for the Russian populations there, but I have to imagine that there are in many urban centers across the United States.
All right, let's bring in Richard Tempest. He is director of Russian, East European, and Eurasian, the Russian, East European, and Eurasian Center at the University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana. He's an expert in Soviet and post-Soviet popular culture and actually lived in the USSR for several years in the 70s. Richard, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi.
So these veteran rock bands like DDT, the one that we've been talking with, how are they affected, I guess, A, by other forms of pop music that are happening in Russia now, and by the clampdown on independent media recently?
Well, DDT is a very good illustration of both the difficulties, the challenges, and also the opportunities that rock bands, rock musicians have to take part in political activity and also to sometimes suffer political persecution. If we talk about sort of the last 10 years, let's say, Shevchuk has always had a very problematic relationship with authority. It goes back to the Soviet Union. But more recently, on the one hand, he's been, for example, very outspoken about, in the late 1990s, the bombings in the NATO bombing of Serbia. He did a film report on the destruction of Orthodox churches in the then Serbian province of Kosovo. But he's also been highly critical, and sometimes in a very witty way, of PAPSA, which is the homegrown kind of...
kind of Russian-inflected pop music.
Russian-inflected, severely inflected pop music. as I like to tell my students when we talk about this in class, you have to imagine Enrique Iglesias singing in Russian, and highly commercialized, and in a sort of gold lamé suit. and even more so, the girl groups, which are entirely manufactured, and which in many people's opinion, including Shevchuk's opinion, are a vulgarization of rock music, pop music.
So they have their own version of the Spice Girls, for example.
Absolutely. Their own version of the Spice Girls, more, if you like, sexualized, a type of music which Shevchuk feels, and many rock musicians of the generation feel, is a profanation of the tradition that began under the Soviet Union as a sort of form of self-expression for young people.
Is this group Viagra, is that one of the sort of manufactured girl groups that you're talking about?
Absolutely. Viagra is a very good example of this. They're a Ukrainian-Russian group, three women who appear on stage in highly skimpy outfits, who gyrate for the delectation of their fans, who are overwhelmingly male. There's a high turnover in the group because the girls get pregnant or get married or both or neither, but they leave. and it is the kind of thing that you can see them on YouTube if you're interested. It's almost an exaggeration of the sort of it's almost like a sort of pole dancing with music. It's very commercial, and gives Russian pop music, if you like, a bad name.
Well, let's hear a little bit, bad name and all. The band is called Viagra, from Russia and the Ukraine. That is the band Viagra, a good example of popsa, as it's known, the pop music that's so familiar to contemporary Russians these days. You don't get the full effect of this song, Brilliant-y, without seeing the sort of semi-pole dancing and skimpy outfits that go with the band. We're speaking about the current state of Russian rock with Richard Tempest from the University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana and with Laura Pellegrinelli from Time Out New York. Laura wrote an article about the Russian band DDT. And Laura, Richard was telling us that, you know, Yuri Shevchuk, the lead singer of DDT, has referred to this kind of popsa stuff as a profanation of the Russian rock tradition. Tell us what that tradition is and what it meant when a band like DDT first gained public notice.
We're talking about a completely different time in history because it's the Soviet era. And so when I interviewed Yuri, he told me that back in those days, the musicians, the young men who were coming up and forming bands, that they heard music as it was coming out in the West. So they knew Led Zeppelin, they knew Jimi Hendrix. These were people that they idolized, you know, as young musicians coming up. But also that maybe in the 80s, when we first started seeing these bands in the West, we had sort of a false idea as to what they were about, you know, thinking that they were identifying with us because they were identifying with freedom and democratic values. But really, it was more about experimentation. And it was also about identifying with the working class or the underclass, the counterculture in the U.S. So that's why in the very beginning, the Soviet authorities didn't actually start cracking down on musicians. They actually thought this was okay because this was proletariat music. And then it was only when these bands like DDT started criticizing the government that they got themselves into trouble.
All right. So the song Don't Shoot, which we can hear a little bit of. This is 1982. This is the Russian, they're in Afghanistan. They've got their own little Vietnam happening.
Right.
And he's basically taking them to task for what they've done.
Right.
Here's the song by the band DDT from 1982.
Эй, малыш, не стреляй и не хвастай другим, что без промаха бьешь по мишеням живым. Ты все тиры залазил, народ удивлял, как отличный стрелок призы получал. Бил с улыбкой, не целясь, навскидкой в лед, а кругом говорили, вот парни везет.
That is the Russian rock band DDT, led by singer Yuri Shevchuk. They are playing tonight at the Hero Ballroom. Lara Pellegrinelli has written about the band in Time Out New York. She's with us in the studio. Richard Tempest is an expert in Soviet and post-Soviet pop culture. He's with us on the phone from the University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana. And Richard, Lara was telling us about this song, how it really did attract the unwanted attention of the Soviet government back in the early 80s. How did perestroika change things for bands like DDT?
Well, perestroika opened the public space, and just as books could be published by Solzhenitsyn or George Orwell, which were banned before, the same went for the possibility of releasing albums openly rather than circulating them in tape form, known as Magnetisdat, magnetic self-publishing. Rock festivals began to take place openly. Performances would be carried out either under the open sky or very often in the factory clubs and movie theaters. The main thing is that these bands, which very often almost underground outfits, could now emerge into the open and could begin to make their music known through the public media, radio, TV, and also, of course, actually releasing albums. So that's when, under perestroika, a certain normalcy began to develop as far as rock music is concerned.
Well, Lara, this all sounds great, but if it were an unalloyed great thing for all these Russian rock bands, we'd be overrun with them at this point, and that is not the case. So what went wrong?
What went wrong was that these groups were unprepared, essentially unprepared to deal with the media, to deal with the industry such as it was at that time. I mean, as he said, people were distributing their music by cassettes, copied from fan to fan. Then all of a sudden you have promoters who move in, record labels who move in. As Yuri said, he spoke about that time as being like a disease that they had to go through. There was drinking, there was money, there were drugs. So there were many musicians who died in that point of time.
So your article is like a litany of drug overdoses, drunk driving deaths, and all kinds
of stuff that he he told me about. So, you know, a lot of these musicians met with an end that, you know, unfortunately came too soon. And I think also here in the United States, at the moment that the Soviet Union collapsed, there was less interest, perhaps, from other kinds of media, from Western media.
Lara Pellegrinelli, speaking with Yuri Shevchuk from the band DDT about some of the history of Russian rock in the 80s. Richard Tempest, let me ask you, what changed in, if anything, in the tenor of the music? I mean, you said before that when it was underground, it was like an opportunity to be part of, you know, the political process, to have something to say. Once freedom came, you know, perestroika was the rule of the land, and these bands could actually make money and make records, was that message somehow diluted?
Yes, in part, because remember that rock music is different from pop music. Rock music is self-consciously artistic. Rock musicians, starting in the mid-1960s, when the term actually came into being with the Beatles, the Beach Boys, and subsequent groups, the term meant a attitude towards music which is more serious, more thoughtful. In Russia, what is very interesting, in Russia, because of the underground aspects of rock music and the lack of equipment, the lack of opportunities to record, words, lyrics were particularly important. Once, the allegorical, elusive, sort of Aesopian message, the way in which, as in the song you played just now, ideas, subversive ideas, anti-government ideas would be coded secretly so that they would not be overtly, let's say, against the invasion of Afghanistan, but people listening to the music would understand that this is what the song was about. Well, with perestroika and then with the post-perestroika period, these kinds of opportunities, because these are opportunities to make political statements in opposition to authority, disappeared. And so a lot of groups lost their bearings. Also, they had to compete with a flood of Western music, which became available, pirated as well as legally imported. And the Russian fans who before it used to almost be a sort of lifestyle choice, you would listen to rock music in secret. Getting a cassette was a major accomplishment. It was something that made your day or your week or even your month. That was no longer had that intensity of experience. And so things became more ordinary. And as I said, the commercialization of the whole industry meant that the kinds of thoughtful lyrics, the kinds of political attitudes that these groups adopted, essentially they no longer sold records.
So in an ironic kind of twist of fate, bands like DDT that did survive this period of, you know, the rock and roll lifestyle killing off all these rock and roll bands, somehow they've become underground again.
Yes,
I mean, under the dueling pressures, as Richard was telling us, of a flood of Western music that's suddenly and completely available, and
the domination of pop on the radio airwaves. Also, the disappearance of independent media in Russia, independent radio, independent television. I mean, it doesn't really exist at this point anymore. So, you know, it makes it difficult for these bands to have an outlet.
So when you spoke to Yuri Shevchuk from DDT about that, I mean, what was his take on, you know, 30 years later, being an underground guy once again?
I don't know. I think in some ways maybe he's more comfortable that way. Maybe it's something that they're used to. Maybe, again, it gives them a sense of purpose and a sense of fulfillment in that they can still be revolutionary artists.
Well, and they certainly have a government that they can rail against once again.
Yes.
Richard, Vladimir Putin has a hand-picked successor who will be taking over in just a couple of months. As you look down the road in the current state of Russia, what can we expect in terms of how that will affect not just rock music specifically, but the arts and culture in general?
Well, I think in the system that has now been created in Russia, the name of the game is control, as far as the media are concerned, certainly. And because rock music requires media access by the very nature of the art form, that means that there will be problems for those groups like DDT, who have their own point of view, which is not the point of view necessarily of the government. You have to realize that in Russia, you can be there is space where these groups can perform. But for example, it's difficult for him and DDT to get on TV. They can do concerts, they can tour as they are right now in the West.
But the major media is not open
right.
to them.
And for some groups, this perhaps is artistically even a plus. I mean, I noticed that in the recent DDT albums, the lyrics are once again extremely important. They kind of resonate with the sorts of underground songs that were performed in the 1960s and 1970s.
The lessons learned as underground artists during the Soviet era are strangely appropriate and strangely useful once again for the members of these bands like DDT.
Yeah.
We've been speaking with Richard Tempest. He is the director of the Russian, East European, and Eurasian Center at the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana, and with Laura Pellegrinelli from Time Out New York here in our studio. Laura, Richard, thank you both for being with us this afternoon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And musicians, just one day left to enter Soundcheck's Rehearsal Space Photo Contest. Go to the Soundcheck page, WNYC.org, for details on how a photo of your practice space could win you a copy of Apple's Logic Studio software package. That's on the Soundcheck page, WNYC.org. This is Soundcheck.